You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 460 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we're coming to you in separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion, Storm.
I'm coming to your friend, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
And is now the home of Dominique Malanga.
Hello.
Officially the number two pick by the Seattle Storm in Monday's WNBA draft. It's a women's basketball heavy episode.
Okay. I was going to say it's not really an emergency pod because we knew this was coming.
We did have a pretty good idea of it. There was no surprise there in the end. The consensus seemed to line up pretty quickly that, you know, once Olivia Miles was out of the draft, that Malanga was the pick for the Storm.
Even if she wasn't. Do we have more to discuss about that, or are we just...
We'll talk about that a little bit more. I mean, do we want to do this emergency pod style? But our toasts are also women's basketball centric.
Okay.
So should we just start there?
Sure.
Well, let's start over the weekend with the EuroLeague Women Final Six. Previously Final Four, but they decided to add two teams this year. And that was a big deal because one of...
Because the man wouldn't give him 10.
because one of those two additional wildcard teams in the Final Four was USK Praha, led by Storm star Ezi Magbegor, who emerged as the unlikely EuroLeague Women's Champions, going a perfect 3-0 in the revamp format, upsetting the heavy favorite Gabby Williams and her Fenerbahce squad in the semifinals and beating Mersin in Sunday's final. Magbegor averaged 11 points and 13 rebounds in the three games, was named to the All-Star 5 alongside Gabby Williams. So Ezi Magbegor, and intriguingly, given the Malanga pick, Ezi Magbegor did this playing primarily at power forward next to Brianna Jones of the Atlanta Dream, who was the, I don't know if they technically called it the MVP, but she was the MVP of the Final Six, Brianna Jones.
Interesting.
So, you know, we've seen Ezi play both front court positions in Seattle. I've tended to like her better historically as a center, but also hasn't had a player as talented as Malanga next to her. So there you go. Congrats also in order to Gabby Williams on being named EuroLeague Defensive Player of the Year after leading all players with 2.8 steals per game. Williams had previously won the award in 2020-21. She was also selected to the All-EuroLeague first team. I mean, this is a thing.
Dominating the EuroLeague.
Storm very strong. Not a strong unrivaled representation where only Skylar Diggins-Smith was, and then Katie Lou Samuelson was playing in unrivaled before she ended up signing with the Storm, I guess she signed midway through that. So she was a part of that, but they didn't have a lot of unrivaled participation, but did have strong representation in EuroLeague. And Gabby Williams continues to just be a complete star in Europe. And it's going to be interesting to see how that translates with her playing a first full season in the WNBA since 2022.
Let's keep talking about the Storm because I don't want to go to hot takes yet. Let's do a full Storm.
Well, let's transition over to the draft with this.
Okay.
Because I moved this after I sent you the notes. Okay. Our last toast is to UW's Delaya Daniels, Seattle native Garfield product, who was drafted number 24 overall in the second round on Monday night by the Minnesota Lynx. She's the first Husky drafted since both Kelsey Plum and Chantel Osahor in 2017. Not coincidentally, the last time that the Huskies went to the NCAA tournament. Second round picks in the WNBA, certainly not guaranteed a roster spot. If you look at Minnesota's roster, the way it lines up, Daniels is probably going to have to beat out their 2024 first-round pick, Elisa Peely, who the Huskies and Daniels saw a lot of when she was playing for Utah in the Pac-12 and starring there, if she's going to make the final roster. So, you know, an uphill battle, but still being drafted, a tremendous honor for Delaya Daniels and another exciting milestone for the Huskies in their revitalization under Tina Langley. We'll talk about that a little more as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I felt like Delaya Daniels' game, just watching her even in the NCAA tournament game, it seemed like something that could translate. Maybe she's a little bit undersized.
Yeah, I think WNBA. She probably has to be a four at the WNBA level, and the shooting is not quite there, but the athleticism, I think, is there.
I felt like the athleticism and the finishing as well. I was like, this could translate. I mean, I guess I haven't seen her against maybe taller players, but it did feel like she has the type of game. Whether she makes the Lynx roster right away, I think she is going to find her way to the WNBA.
I mean, certainly there's going to be more opportunities. That's one of the exciting things that's happening with expansion here. We've got, 12 more roster spots with the Golden State Valkyries coming into the league this year, 24 more at a minimum, depending what happens with the next collective bargaining agreement and those negotiations with Portland and Toronto entering the league in 2025. So yeah, some of these players that, sort of have been hanging around, this is the time.
And also, so like the talent pool obviously gets bigger every year, right? There are going to be good players drafted each year. There's going to be more international players coming in. But when you think about those additional roster spots, you look at this in the NBA, right? Like some of the players who are playing over the last week and putting up big numbers on the final day of the season, who I've never heard of. The amount of roster
Do you have a
spots.
number one example there?
No, I don't, because I've never heard of them. There's some dude who had a triple double on Sunday.
Well, I don't think did Jonathan Mobo, he had a triple double at some point last weekend, I'm pretty sure. I don't know for sure if it was on Sunday.
Maybe it wasn't Sunday exactly, but did Pat Connaughton go for like 50?
Okay, Mobo did have a triple double on Sunday. Yes. Oh no,
Yeah.
he had 9 points. The triple double was on Wednesday. Then on Sunday, he had 9 points, 14 rebounds, and 10 assists,
There we go.
and four steals.
H huge
Mobo,
for Jonathan Mo Mo
draft sleeper of
Mobo.
mine.
On what
He
team?
might have was he on the Toronto Raptors? We should revisit this.
Oh God, if he's on the
Jonathan
list.
Mobo might have been one of the players to watch. I
Spoiler
think that
alert.
is entirely possible. Are you
If the
saying,
players weren't all Tumani Kamara, I did not watch.
you saw a lot of Tumani Kamara? I saw a lot of Tumani
Had to
Kamara.
squint really hard, but I saw a lot of
Whoa.
Tumani
I saw him in real HD in person on
Wow.
Friday night against
No, we
the
were in
Warriors.
Oregon and turned on the game, and I was like, wow, it's crazy. It's in HD here.
Okay, our players to watch for 2024. Trey Alexander was the obligatory Denver Nuggets representative. Really did not get much of a shot this
I like
year.
that we're revisiting this at the end of the season. This is the first time we've ever done this, I think.
Reed Sheppard didn't play a lot.
Did
He's the number
he
three
figure
pick.
it out a little bit?
He did. He had some good moments.
I actually meant
We're
to ask
back
you
up.
about this. So Zachary Richachet, right? I got it.
Yes.
Yeah, those 3 years of French class really paid off. I feel like you
Can you
were
help translate for me with Malunga?
maybe
And she speaks
totally wrong
English.
on this one. Are you willing to admit that?
About Risa Shea?
Yeah. Is
No.
he not kind of awesome as a rookie?
No.
He didn't have any moments.
He had moments. I mean, I don't think he's going to be like a horrible player or
Okay.
anything. He's just not like a number one pick quality player.
I felt like I
Because
was seeing.
this was like the worst rookie class in the last 10 years. I don't
Well,
know if
so
you're
then.
aware of this.
But then the threshold is lower, right, for the first pick in the draft.
But
Who do
that's
you
the point,
think?
is someone had to go first.
Who do you think after the season, is there like a unanimous, oh, that player should have been the first pick?
Yeah, Stephon Castle, who's going to
Okay.
win a rookie there. No, he wasn't that good either as a rookie, but
He was a little bit overrated. It's Castle and then
well,
who's
all
like the
the
top
rookies are
three?
overrated. No rookies are as good as people think they are, unless
Ever
people think they're
ever or
horrible.
current or this season?
I mean, I don't know, like, Tim Duncan was as good as a rookie as
But you're
people thought
saying
he was.
frequently rookies
In
are
this
overrated.
era where the wars, teams are aggressively rebuilding and are drafting typically 19-year-olds at the top of the draft. So, Atlanta actually wasn't a bad team, but Risa was sort of grandfathered minutes, even though DeAndre Hunter was clearly the much better player, and the Hawks played way better anytime they had Hunter on the court until they traded him at the trade deadline. Like, Risa still started throughout the season. I mean, again, he wasn't a bad player. It's just like, it's a below average rebound rate, as many assists as turnovers, the things that people don't pay attention to.
He's just had some scoring moments.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Who else? Stephon
But he
Castle,
also
then who?
then, like, he had 38 points on Thursday against Brooklyn, and the other three ga his other last three games of the season, granted they rested him on Sunday, but the other three last three games of the season, he scored a combined 24 points. But anyway, I wanted to note that Reed Sheppard, he had a big fourth quarter against Oklahoma City. recently. Had 20 points in a start against the Clippers on Wednesday. So,
Do you think he's going to play at all in the playoffs?
probably not in the playoffs, no.
Okay. We'll be seeing him in the second round.
Johnny Furthy, another guy who's gotten some minutes at the end of the season here, played a little
He's
bit
a
with,
white guy, right? Pacers.
yeah, Australian.
I saw him throw down a dunk.
He had a monster dunk on Thursday. I talked about
And
it with
I told
somebody from
Luka
the
his name
Pacers.
was Troy Firthy,
Echoing great Pacer Troy Murphy.
I think I actually think that's why. Wait, now that you say that, that's
Obviously,
definitely
it's
why.
why. Yeah, this was this list might have gotten. I mean, it's funny because Furphy and Shepherd are not exactly like super obscure. They were draft picks this year, but just didn't a lot of guys who didn't play a lot in this. Scottie Pippen Jr. did play a lot, was very important for them, particularly early in the season.
For the Grizz.
Yeah, Pacome Dadier did not play at all for the Knicks because they didn't have the injuries that we sort of expected them to have on the perimeter. Tristan Da Silva started most of the year for the Magic. Another guy that people thought was much more effective than he was has kind of seen his role slip recently, but will probably be in the rotation for the playoffs. Gershon Yabusele, who,
Oh
if the
yeah, of course I
Sixers,
know about Yabusele.
yeah, I mean, he started most of the season. If the Sixers had actually been better, like it would have been really important that they got him for the minimum. Ryan Dunn for the Suns did have a nice rookie season, played a fair bit for them, 3-and-D role. Julian Champagne emerged as a
Nope.
very solid reserve for the Spurs. Both
I know about Yabusele, but Champagne, nope.
Champagnes had good years, I would say.
There are two
Justin with the
Champagnes.
Wizards, yeah. And then Mobo was the 10th player on the list.
He was on the list.
Oh yeah, of course he was.
Is so funny that he randomly came up.
He spent some of the year in the G League, but played 63 games and averaged, I guess, not as many assists per 36 minutes I was hoping, but 10.9 points, 11, 8.7 rebounds, 1.5 steals. So he's doing some things out there, Jonathan Bobo.
Okay. One other NBA playoff question for you. Lakers in five?
I would not say in five. I'm probably going to pick the
Lakers in
Lakers.
seven?
I mean, they have home court advantage.
Oh, when we say Lakers in five, I don't think you know what we're saying.
What do you mean?
We're not talking like
Oh.
first round.
Let's
Do you
all
not know
remain
what
calm here.
Lakers in five means?
Let's all remain calm
Us
here.
Lakers fans don't talk in terms of the first round.
Oh, yes, because of all those many finals appearances in the last
Hey,
since Kobe.
how dare you?
I think you know precisely how I do.
The correct answer to my Lakers in five was Lakers in five. Hope you
Sorry,
forgot.
that answer is not acceptable here.
Okay, fair enough. The Knicks are the play-in?
No.
Oh, the Knicks are playing the Pistons, not in the play-in. That's like the 3-6 or the 4-5.
Correct, the Pistons aren't in the play-in. That's the
Got it.
story here.
Yeah, okay. I saw that they were playing each other and I immediately went to the play-in, but I was like, oh, that just occurred to me that other matchups are determined.
Early in the season, I tried to outdo Nate Duncan's bold prediction that the Pistons would be in the play-in by saying my bold prediction was that not only would they be in the play-in, but they would win a play-in game. And even that was not bold enough.
Wow, Boulder.
Just straight to the playoffs
Maybe
as
you
the
should have
sixth seed.
considered Pistons in five.
Is this actually a thing? Is this a meme?
Lakers in five?
Yeah.
That's just how many games we're going to win the championship in.
Okay. But like Bucks in six is a thing because Brandon Jennings said it before a series that they lost. I forget which series. They were like the eighth seed when Brandon Jennings did the Bucks in six. Also, you drinking a
Did
fever tree?
you know about Fever Tree?
I have a fever tree in the fridge.
Elderflower tonic water, baby.
I have the Sicilian lemon.
Do you really?
It's my favorite, yeah.
Wow, I can't believe I've been so exposed. I was gonna get a spicy V8 to drink also, because this is my life
Well,
now.
that's not going to be a thing. Okay, the Bucks trailed. Do-do-do-do.
Did Brandon Jennings ever do a Who the Hell is Kevin Pelton?
Oh, no.
He really seems like somebody who would have.
I mean, I suppose so. When the Bucks were down 2-0 in the first round against the Heatles in 2013 as the eighth seed, that's when Brandon Jennings
Oh,
hit
I
the world with
love
the
it.
Bucks in six.
I love it. Honestly, like,
They did not win in six.
I like that this is the middle of our women's basketball. Okay, so the point is, Delea Daniels, there are going to be a lot more players in the league roster spots that are going to happen to circle back around, not just at the start of the season, but throughout the season, the amount of professional WNBA players is just increasing every single year.
I mean, I don't know what you mean. There will be players that don't start the season on rosters that do
Yes,
show up. Yeah, but
the rosters are going to have to be bigger, but like right now, when there's how many teams there before this, before Golden State has joined?
well, Golden State is joined.
I know, but like last year,
There were 12. Now there's
12,
13,
and
and
there's
in a
going to be
year there'll be
15
15.
next year. I mean, that's a pretty significant increase.
It
And so,
is.
again, it's not just those
It's
players that are starting
25%.
the roster on the team. I mean, it's like the same as baseball. Like we pore over who's on the roster, and then 1 week passes basically,
It
and
is
the
not the
roster
same
gets
as
shaken
baseball
up
because there's
completely.
not minor leagues.
I understand, but you understand what I'm saying.
The
Like,
number of players who play in the WNBA in a given season who don't start the year on the roster is like under 20.
but that number is going to go up. In the
I mean,
NBA,
a
it's pretty
little bit.
high, isn't it?
Yeah, because of the fact that they have a minor league and the contracts are structured very differently. So just some players will get opportunities.
It's going to increase.
Should we talk? Do we have anything else on the Malunga pick? I guess we should talk about the. This is the first time that the Storm's GM Talisa Rhea and Noel Quinn, the head coach, had a chance to talk about her after the draft. Did not really offer a lot of specifics. Number one, on the idea of sort of when they decided that Malunga was going to be the pick, whether it was before or after Olivia Miles decided not to declare for the WNBA draft, and then also about when she might be able to join the team. I think the expectation is that she will play in the WNBA this season, but that's going to be affected by a couple of things. As we've talked about, the French league where she plays for Asvel is the one notable league in the world that has not reorganized its schedule around the WNBA's prioritization rule. Prioritization doesn't affect Malunga because she is in the first 2 years of her career.
Interesting.
And there's also a weird catch-22. I mean, all of this is going to change in the next CBA, but there's a weird catch-22 right now where you don't get credited technically for a year of service if you show up late. So you continue to not be subject to the rule because you're subject to the rule. So that's how
What does
that's.
that mean? You don't get credited with a year of service. So, like, she'll be a rookie the next season if she shows up late?
I mean, not in any meaningful terms, but in terms of strictly the way it's applied to that rule, yes.
Just that rule. It's not contract anything else. It's like you get
Correct.
to your second contract later or something.
Yes. So, Marine Johannes with the Liberty is the player that they've sort of been able to take advantage of that particular loophole.
It seems like a pretty stupid rule, if you ask me.
I mean, it's worked, as we've talked about, with these other leagues that have, again, changed to fit the WNBA schedule rather than the other way around. So if the league didn't have that rule, then players would still be coming out, coming back to the team, even into the regular season. So
Maybe. I'm still pretty skeptical, but
it was 2 years ago. Not that much has changed. But no, like,
a lot has changed with the WNBA in 2 years.
not that much has changed. The biggest stars are playing in Unrivaled, but number one, there are still a lot of second-tier stars who have really enjoyed playing overseas. And number two, there's a lot of international players for whom the idea of like playing in Europe in the off-season, it's not like they're away from home in the same sense as American players. So that's something we see with, Gabby Williams grew up in America, but, has been playing in overseas has been a big part of her career, as Imagbegor, even though she's not from Europe, same thing. So, those are the players who would be coming in late if you didn't have the rule. So, anyways, and then she will presumably leave the team for Eurobasket in June along with Gabby Williams. So Storm will be very, very shorthanded in their starting lineup during that or during the in the their lineup during that period of time.
So tell me about Dominique Malunga's game right now. The obvious comparison is Wemby, right? But it
Yeah, I
feels
think it's
like.
kind of a ridiculous comparison. Like the whole point of Wemby is, I mean, she's not as relatively tall. Like 6'6" is probably equivalent to like 7'2", I would say, because like 6'5" is 7 foot, so 6'6" is like 7'2", and you'd have to be like 6'7" to be Wemby's 7'4".
Still,
Someone,
that's pretty freaking tall.
it is very
Seven
tall.
two is still tall.
It was also said, I think, on the broadcast today that her wingspan is over 7 feet. which would be wild if that were the case. That might be the biggest wingspan in the league. But Wemby, the thing is, he plays like a guard. You know, Malunga does have some ability to shoot threes, and I think in time that could be a part of her game, but that's not the strength of her game. Like, she's a much more traditional post player than Wemby is, I would say, and not the game-changing defender. I think she moves really well for 6'6", obviously has the wingspan, but we haven't necessarily seen the giant blocks numbers that, you know, Wemby blocked enough shots that even though he didn't play enough games to qualify, he still led the league in blocks, because even if you count those as games of 0 blocks up to where you need to qualify, he was that far ahead of everyone else. So, I mean, Wemby is one of one. There's no one compares to Wemby other
I
than
know, and
Bobo.
I mean, if she was that good, she would have been the first pick in the draft.
Yes.
But what about the game outside of that? So you said it's a more traditional post game offense. She's still developing, it seems like.
Yeah, but I mean, she scored a lot of points in Euro Cup. She was a primary scorer
How
for
is
her
she
team.
scoring though? Is it dunks? Is it putbacks? Is it
I
post moves? Like, how
mean,
are those points being scored?
so she was the first player, I believe, to dunk in French league
I
game.
mean, just seeing her throw down the dunks just so effortlessly, it was like, oh, this is she is moves much smoother than most people who are 6'6".
Exactly. That's, I think, the biggest thing that people highlight. One of the comparisons, they talked a little bit about this because they were asked on the call tonight about the comparison with New York and, you know, the size that they have in the front court with Jonquil Jones and Breanna Stewart. And Jonquil Jones is, I think, someone who comes up a lot as a comparison for Malunga, someone who has similar height and mobility and a lot of skill offensively. But like, she's putting up points. She averaged 18. She was 10th in Euro Cup play at 18.5 points per game. So, like, this is not someone who, you know, is just like getting garbage buckets or that sort of thing, certainly. But I think
And
a lot of pick and roll
what about
and post
shooting? Is
ups.
that still coming together?
Yeah. So in Euro Cup play, she was 6 of 21 on threes. So. And 63% on the foul line, which is not like super encouraging necessarily about the long-term potential there.
She's going to be a more traditional center than,
Yeah.
and that's why the Wemby, it's like she's French and she's tall.
Yes.
That's it. But the thing that
And
Wemby
good.
does, the stretch ability is what makes Wemby different. If Wemby
When he
just scored
plays
around
like
the
a
rim,
guard
he would
at
be
seven
fine.
four.
He would probably still have been the first pick in the draft, even if he didn't shoot threes.
Sometimes maybe better. If we're being totally honest here.
What do you mean? Like, if he was just a traditional post player,
Yeah.
you think he might be more valuable on offense?
Yeah.
Really? Isn't that ideal? Because he just doesn't dunk that much.
I would like him to score more around the basket than he does currently. Yes.
Interesting. It's almost like people are so desperate to call somebody a unicorn or whatever that they forget that the way that basketball is played, it can be around the rim. Like,
Yes.
shorter people can shoot threes. They've got that. You know what I mean?
I mean, look, if you have big players that can shoot threes, it gives you a lot more options. I agree, but just like that should be one tool, not necessarily the primary tool.
The only tool. Okay. So what you're saying is that Malanga is better than Wemby on offense. Got it.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
But no, I think it's a really interesting profile, and it just doesn't feel like I will be fascinated to see what it's like this year. I think the Storm are going to find a way to get her on the court.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the player whose role maybe changes the most is Li Yiru, who they brought in to sort of be their give them size at center with Mercedes Russell leaving for the Sparks in free agency, and now Malunga sort of does that for them with, I think, more skill, somewhat more skill than Yiru brings to the table, and then obviously more long-term potential. It's interesting. I hadn't realized it. So the second leading scorer on her team, Osvel, in Euro Cup play was Juste Jasite, who was the number 5 pick by the Golden State Valkyries in the draft tonight. So their two leading scorers both were drafted in the top 5. And then they also have, to bring it back around, Zachary Risacher's younger sister, who
Oh.
played in the Hoop Summit over the weekend. I saw her play in Portland.
Nice.
And she's a bit younger, but averaged 5.1 points per game for them.
Where is the WNBA era wise, right? Like the NBA's 3 points, that's it, right? That's the era that they're in. Where is the WNBA at era wise?
Oh, the shooting isn't nearly as good in the
But
WNBA.
I'm not saying the shooting is good, but like how is the game played overall? Is it a little bit more like 90s NBA basketball,
Yeah, because I
inside,
think,
outside, big men?
the sheer size is more difficult to find in the women's game than it is in the men's game. So, the ability to play through the post is much greater. It's funny because like the two top post scorers in the league both went to the Atlanta Dream, Brittney Griner and Breonna Jones, a team that whose coach Carl Semenko never called post ups in college. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out. Played a very NBA style, frankly, in college.
So then, judging by that, who do we compare her to from 90s NBA basketball?
It's hard to do that without probably getting too optimistic, I would say.
Be optimistic. What do you mean without getting too optimistic?
I mean, the profile was a little like David Robinson, I guess.
David Robinson was who I was thinking of.
Yeah, but I mean, David Robinson is, one of the 50 greatest NBA players of all
We
time
just
at a
talked about her being
minimum.
compared to Wemby. So, like, who's one of the probably 10 most exciting prospects in history?
Sure. But David Robinson's pretty close to that list himself.
But that's kind of like 90 centers who she compares to. And David Robinson was a dominant scorer, a very good defender.
I mean, she's probably not going to be that good as a defender. David Robinson, defensive player of the year caliber player. But that, like, the Patrick Ewing certainly doesn't seem like the right answer.
No, I don't feel like it's a Patrick Ewing game. But because David Robinson was athletic.
I mean, young Patrick Ewing was very athletic. We are thinking of later era Patrick Ewing, but even by his
Even
prime
still,
years.
though, like you do see Georgetown Patrick Ewing. Like that's probably the peak athleticism was probably in
Yeah,
college.
without question. He like goaltended four consecutive shots to begin a championship game.
Cool. It's like such a strange thing to be
No.
like
John Thompson told him to do it is like an intimidation
just
tactic.
to prove a point. Oh my God, basketball was more fun back then. Ime Udoka would never.
I feel like Ime Udoka, if anyone would, might be Ime.
NBA coaches are more likely to be fired than to do that.
With three games left in the season.
All right. Well, I'm excited about this. I think it makes the Storm. I think the Storm last year were a little bit rudderless isn't the right word, but they were a good team without that much of an identity and without anybody to be like Skylar Diggins-Smith, Nneka Nwabuike, Jewell Loyd. Like they're good players. They've been around for a while. Having a young player to get excited about is a totally different thing, and a homegrown young player. And I think this Storm season instantly, right now, and I feel this way, Olivia Miles would have been one thing. With Malunga vis-a-vis Olivia Miles, it is like we are in right now because there you could be, she might not ever pan out to this, but it feels like there is a chance that we could be witnessing greatness. So.
I mean the way that people talk about her, I think that like the idea that like, oh, should she go number one over Paige Becker is like it got a little out of hand in my
We
view.
don't know.
But
We don't know though. Like,
we don't. I mean, I think it's very plausible that she could end up the best player from this draft.
I think there's a chance that we could look back on this draft and say that the Storm with the second pick ended up with the best player.
And the exciting thing is they've still got three first round picks for next year because they didn't end
So
up trading them for Paige Beckers.
they have, I knew there's no fucking chance that. They have the lit, not the Lakers, the Sparks first round pick. The
Correct.
Storm and the Aces?
Yes.
Okay. So, presumably pretty good teams, but.
Well, I mean the Sparks, I think, and the question mark. I mean, the Storm themselves may be the question mark. It may be in the lottery, but it would be very surprising if all three of those teams made the playoffs. I'd put it that way.
Are they still doing the 2-year lottery?
Correct.
Okay.
So the Sparks start out with the worst record. All right, let's talk about the third round a little bit. Storm had three picks in the third round. Most notably, with the 26th pick, the top pick of the third round, they took the last player invited to the draft, Serena Sundell from Kansas State, the all-time assist leader for the Wildcats, all Big 12 first team pick each of the last two seasons. I actually got to see her final college game as they played. I mean, now I'm blanking on who they actually played in the NCAA tournament. I guess that was against USC. And re really good size at a listed 6'2" for lead ball handler, someone that they were able to play off the ball a little bit as well because of her shooting ability. I think the biggest question here is going to be, can she keep up defensively against guards at that size? You know, is she going to have the quickness? That was the reason that she wasn't, you know, a particularly high recruit coming into Kansas State, but someone who started from day one, you know, peaked at 14.7.3 rebounds. Not a great outside shooter, 33.5% career, didn't shoot a lot of threes, shot more of them as a freshman, and played a style where, you know, a lot of it was built around their center, Ayoka Lee, when she was healthy, although, you know, Lee missed enough time that we also got to see Sundell playing in kind of a more wide open offense at times as well. But, you know, she rated pretty well in my WNBA draft model. Was not someone I was expecting to still see out there when the Storm were picking, and I think a realistic chance to make the roster this year. At pick 29, they took
Were
guard
you not
Matt.
going to mention the other thing about?
Oh yes, and of course her brother Jalen. I just learned this when she talked about it on the ESPN broadcast. Is Jalen Sundell, the Seahawks center who made the team as an undrafted rookie this year? So she said her parents were very excited about that, having just one trip to make for the both of them.
Any chance to get out of Missouri?
With the 29th pick, the Storm took guard Madison Connor from TCU. This is a big-time shooter, led the NCAA in three-pointers last season, joined Sundell on the All-Big 12 first team. One of the things that Storm coach Noel Quinn cited when talking about her was her size for a shooter at 5'11". So, you know, ability to get the shot off helps her out defensively. That's a need for the Storm. It's one that I think that they probably have already addressed on their bench with the addition of Lexi Brown via trade with LA. But you know, that's a WNBA skill that gives her a chance to come in and keep for a roster spot. Then at pick 34, the Storm took Michigan forward Jordan Hobbs, probably a small forward, more than a power forward. So excellent size for that spot at 6'3". Shot 39% on threes as a junior, but dropped to just 34% last season. Definitely, you know, in that role, she's going to have to be able to shoot it from three. So there you go. I think a good night, all told, for the Storm. You know, Sundell, I think excellent value where they got her, and then, you know, they did what we were hoping for with Malunga. So there you go. I don't know what is the date on the start of WNBA training camps. It's coming up here. Obviously, there's a very brief turnaround. April 27th will be the Sunday, April 27th will be the first day of training camp.
All right. When does the season start? June?
May 16th.
Wow. It is 1 month from now.
Life comes at you fast, but the WNBA season comes at you particularly fast. All right, with that, is it time for your favorite segment?
The crazy takes. I don't know if they're good or not.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
Flashback to 1962. An American epic is released, starring many of the greats from the golden era of film, Gregory Peck, Henry Fonda, George Peppard. It told a story through generations of a family struggling as they explore and settle the frontier of the American West. It was a long and harrowing journey with many, many lows, ultimately leading to the highest of highs we stand in now. Don't ask me if it's now considered racist. I haven't seen it, and in my brief Googling was inconclusive. Flash forward to 2003. A British rock band from the 70s called Led Zeppelin called together live recordings from shows in LA and Long Beach and released them as an epic album. It wasn't without its lows as well, though. A journey that started around 1977 made people sit through a 19-minute drum solo during Moby Dick. 23 minutes of Whole Lotta Love, longer than it even took Lenny Randle to blow the ball foul. A just about to graduate high school Tristan at the time called the album Incendiary. But I'm here to tell you, both of these pieces of art are absolute bullshit. because the way the West was won was over six warm nights at T-Mobile Park in April. That's right, baby. The Mariners, written off by the know-nothings at ESPN and Fangraphs, hopped on the dumper's back with timely hits, chaos ball, the return of the Gas Brothers, and a healthy dose of El Jefe de los Bomberos, and ended the seasons of the Houston Astros and Texas Rangers, and now stand as the once again and rightful favorites of the American League West, with a returning soon George Kirby and Matt Brash, a close to even run differential, but an astronomical fun differential. And that, my friend, is how the West was won.
Wow. When was the last time the Mariners won the AL West? In 2001, right? That has to be the most recent time.
2025. Is the most recent time that the Mariners won the AL West.
Okay. Yeah, the vibes changed in a hurry for the Mariners, and I'm disappointed. I thought this take was going to be primarily about torpedo bats saving the season. Only, actually, I shouldn't say torpedo bats. I should just say torpedo bat. Because all it took was Cal.
I don't want to just look, torpedo bat is great. Three consecutive dingers in three games is great. I don't want to give the credit to the torpedo bat, because we give the credit where the credit is due, and that is to the dumper. There's so many things that people, maybe it added some confidence or something like that. We do not credit the bats around here. We credit the players. Cal Raleigh has been hard at work 365 days a year for many years in a row. One bat doesn't change everything overnight. Cal Raleigh had it in him, those home runs. It wasn't last season. You don't credit the torpedo bat. I think the only reason that it might have changed,
but the point is, like, Cal Raleigh was a very good player last year. You know, one of the best catchers in baseball. But now with the torpedo bat, better than Babe Ruth.
There we go.
That's my take.
The Mariners just have won the American League West three times ever. It's so incredible.
So 1995, 1997, and 2001.
I mean, they've made the playoffs so few times.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like, oh, wow, is compared to wild card in 2000 and 2022. That's it. Or whatever. What year was that? 2022.
Yeah. I stopped paying attention to the team for a decade and I missed nothing.
Every once in a while, there'll be a reference to a player who played on the Mariners. And I'll be like, huh, that's a thing that happened.
The player's name is Vladimir Ballantyne.
For some reason, I think Vladimir Ballantyne, his career, because to me, I wouldn't necessarily watch the games, but I would read USS Mariner for a long period of time. So it's got to be after USS Mariner sort of faded out of the consciousness, and between that and when Mitch Haniger won the game on the Saturday night that I decided to watch.
Yeah, you were there. You had a lost era that I was still participating in.
It's all true. It's all true. Or Mariners Dark Ages.
Was not participating in it. I was separately, I guess. I don't know.
It's all
not talking about it. We just didn't talk about it. Didn't come up. A great weekend, though.
Indisputably.
I was looking at the series against the Rangers, and it was basically like, I think they can beat DeGrom, and we know they're going to beat Kumar Rocker. No nervousness there. And then you have Gilbert going against Nathan Eovaldi on Sunday. To sweep this series in a series against the Rangers that, you know, Leiter might have put it together or whatever for them, you're still facing two ace level pitchers in DeGrom and Nathan Eovaldi. And to win both of those games, I think it was a huge moment for the Mariners. And the way that they won some of the games against the Astros as well, like the comeback that they had in a game that we had pretty much completely written off. We didn't talk about this, but Randy Rosarina's walk off on that game on Thursday. Walk off is what we're calling it.
No.
It's the accents on the walk. Walk off. Not walk off. Walk off. I believe I didn't see much of the game yesterday. I didn't see any of the game yesterday, but he got hit by a pitch with the bases loaded.
I was unaware of that information.
Randy Rosarina is coming up with new and fun ways to score with the bases loaded. But The way that the game, the Astros game, that we had just completely written it off. I'm watching and I'm just like, I fucking hate this team. Like I was the lowest that I felt about the Mariners in an extraordinarily long time. And then to go from that to how quickly the Mariners transform from that into like they get the grand slam. And even then, I'm like, they're still gonna lose this game
Right.
when Randy hits a grand slam. It is just
Well,
embarrassing.
Root Sports flashed up the graphic that they'd won 21 consecutive home games in which they won a grand hit a grand slam. It was like, wow, he really is going to be a truly impressive masterpiece for them to do that and still lose the game. But then they didn't.
So to do that, to have a comfortable victory also over the weekend, which is something that we hadn't really seen before then. Obviously winning four in a row is great no matter what, but it feels like the overreacting. I will say I told you this last week on the podcast. Even if things hadn't gone their way for a while, even if they'd split, I guess you couldn't, they're both three game series, but like if they'd won one and lost one and they were 2-1, 1-2 or something like that, I was still feeling very good about the Mariners because it's true that considering how few games they've played, not having George Kirby has mattered during this time period.
I mean, yes, because they've gotten such dramatically below replacement pitching from Emerson Hancock and Luis F. Castillo in those three starts. And yet somehow like saved their best. It's a very funny, by the way. I don't think people have specifically noticed this, that George Kirby is out and in his spot in the lineup, like or in the rotation, the Mariners are suddenly scoring all sorts of runs for Luis F. Castillo, who got a combined 17 runs of support in his two starts.
That's actually kind of incredible.
It is
But
just like chef's kiss. So Mariners.
the way that Jorge Polanco is hitting the ball, you know, setting themselves up, obviously the Cal two-run homer that won the game on Friday night, set up by the Polanco hit before then. Having him just be a steady hitter in the lineup, he'll probably regress to the mean a little bit,
You don't think he's going to hit 350? Whatever
but
he's at right
also,
now.
yeah, the th over 1,000 OPS. But like, even if he regresses a little bit, the expectation for Jorge to have a pretty good season, I think, is now fairly high.
I would agree.
So, and then the underlying stats with, you know, Randy and how hard he's hitting the ball, Julio and how hard he's hitting the ball right now in April. Like, just every time I think about the Mariners, I look at what day it is and I'm like, it's April 14th. Like, you can't really make any perspectives about this team overall, but all of the stuff that we felt before the season is still true, and I actually, even though they're only 500, weirdly feel better about the Mariners right now than I did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean,
And
I think like the reason for optimism was the offense was going to be better than you thought. And then, the bullpen would be back. And the bullpen has been fairly average thus far, maybe a little bit below overall, but they've survived some injuries there.
but
And
Munoz has been dominant.
yeah. Oh, without question. But they've been doing this without because of the Luis F. Castillo and ha starts in the Hancock start. Like the starting pitchers overall have been not that good. They're 13th in starting pitcher WAR, according to Fangraphs, the same as the offense in WRC plus. So, like for them to have survived that and still be in the position that they are, have taken 5 out of 6 from their AL West rivals. I think that is a very encouraging sign. Should we talk about the troubling thing though, trend
I
though?
not yet, but I also want to say I feel like Gilbert, there was a moment that it was kind of like it was hard to tell who was ahead with all the starters. And I think this is the season. Happened a little bit. Logan Gilbert is now clearly the ace. He is the dominant starter for the Mariners. And seeing what is his FIP 243, his whip is 0.662, strikeouts per nine, 12.7 strikeouts per nine. I think there was concern about Castillo, about the Luis Castillo having some regression, which maybe there's a little bit, but he's still been. I mean, his ERA, I think the underlying stats aren't as good, but his ERA is 2 right now for Luis Castillo. We'll see. That's probably going to go up a little bit over time.
Yes.
But it feels like Logan Gilbert is getting to the level that this is the Mariners, so this is never true. But they're getting close to like you could chalk up a win every 5 days when Gilbert's on the mound.
He I don't know what the team record is in those four starts. He's got one win thus far.
That was yesterday on Sunday. Well, they won opening night when he started, and he has a loss. So I don't remember the third start.
We must have started one of the San Francisco games, right? No, he started the opener against Houston. So they are 3-1 in his four starts.
Which is the loss?
Detroit.
One of the Tigers games? And Casey Mize outdueled him or something? I can't remember which one. I think that might have been it.
Mariners scored one run. Yeah, it was Casey Mize.
So, but again, yeah, if the Mariners give him anything, it feels like Gilbert's going to win now, which is awesome. It's great to have a pitcher. Like they've had Gas Brothers nonstop, very good, but it feels like Logan has taken a step beyond that right now. Okay, what's your negative? Is it Ryan Bliss?
Yeah,
What's
it's
the
the
negative about?
injuries. I mean, you're gonna poo-poo the injuries? I mean, so the last time we recorded,
I mean, I feel bad for the players themselves.
I don't think we knew the full details on Victor Robles'
We do not.
injury. He suffered a small fracture to the humeral head of his left shoulder during the dislocation, hitting the wall, the enemy wall in San Francisco. Mariners, per their release, currently planning a non-surgical course of treatment, which would require 6 weeks to heal and an additional 6 weeks of rehab, which would put Robles' return around the end of June. Would presume it would be a longer timetable if the fracture does not heal on its own and surgery is required. And then Bliss underwent surgery to repair a bicep tear, expected to miss the bulk of the regular season in the next 4 or 5 months. And with him out of the lineup and Jorge Polanco unable to play the field right now, Mariners sent down Dom Canzone and called up prospect Ben Williamson on Sunday. The 2023 second round pick played just 150 minor league games, was hitting 281 in his first 14 games at AAA Tacoma, a new level for him, albeit without much power and without his usually strong walk rate. But the big appeal of Williamson, and something that will help the Mariners without question right now, is his defense at the hot corner. So,
And he's a proper third baseman, Ben Williamson.
yeah.
Basically the only one on the roster.
The fact that Solano hasn't been able to play there is maybe a little bit of a disappointment. But yeah, like Dylan Moore is trying to plug too many holes right now. Until they perfect cloning Dylan Moore, they needed someone else who could play third base.
Maybe Solano shouldn't play anywhere.
I'm not what has he had? 18 at bats?
Now
I'm
you
not
have
willing to
very,
read
very
too much
few.
into that.
Which is look, they're the hits are plural, so
Look at how we've seen Rowdy Tellez come around lately. Up to a solid three hits. Yeah, it's 19 plate appearances. The sample size is pretty meaningless.
Tellez with a cool 100 batting average.
What do they call the one? We know the Mendoza line. What do they call it when you're hitting below 100? They don't even
Mendoza
have
line
a
is
term for it.
200, right?
Yeah, that's what I
I
said,
feel
didn't
like
I?
in modern baseball, like they have to kind of revise that because
They do have to revise that, I agree. Much of the Mariners, granted that they've played primarily at home, and this is a factor of this, much of the Mariners lineup is hitting under 200, including some of the guys we're excited about. The silver lining of the
just Randy is the guys that we're excited about who are under 200.
Oh, I was counting Luke Rayleigh. You don't think we're excited about Luke Rayleigh?
Yeah, sure. I'm excited about Rayleigh. I don't know, excited about. That's not exactly the right word, but I like Luke Rayleigh.
The silver lining of the Bliss injury is our guy Miles Mastrobuoni, 318 batting average, crucial in that comeback against the Astros. I've been liking what I've been seeing from Miles Mastrobuoni.
Mastrobuoni.
And it's important because we need, with Canzone in the minor leagues, we need to keep at least one Italian on the roster at all times.
Miles Mastrobuoni.
I don't want to hit it too hard.
You... Since when? Didn't you see
Sam
WRC Plus rankings for that?
Onofrio Haggerty.
Yeah, did you see it?
Fangraphs has it.
Okay.
Mariners getting a little healthier in the bullpen on the plus side. Troy Taylor was activated from the injured list for the road trip, and Matt Brash made his first rehab appearance for the Tacoma Rainiers on Sunday as he works closer to a return from Tommy John surgery. Are you looking for anything specific on WRC Plus, or is this just a
No,
fishing
just
expedition?
checking it out.
Just vibing it? Okay. Well, let me know if you want to throw anything in on the podcast
Later on. You'll be talking about the Sounders, of
We'll
course.
be midway through the
I
rain
won't be
section.
listening when you talk about the Sounders, but
Oh, you never do.
somebody might.
I could be talking about Jonathan Mobo. You'd never know. All right, into the roundup. The Seattle Kraken wrap up their regular season. Well, wrap up the season Tuesday by hosting the LA Kings. They are currently tied for fifth in the reverse standings, but could finish as high as fourth with a loss or as low as a tie for seventh with a win in the finale. The regular season keeps going through Thursday. The Kraken end much before the league as a whole. Several of the other teams around them have two games remaining, so still much to be determined
I
in
think I
terms of the
found
Kraken positioning.
the hockey bet that I want to make
Okay,
for.
you're going to adopt the team?
Well, so I think I determined I was kind of like the money's pretty good if you pick the winner, right? Like no matter who it is, even if it's the favorite, right? Like it's plus, I don't know what the NBA futures are. I should look at that in a second. But
Well, they're way lower because the sport isn't completely random in the playoffs like hockey. Also, as a piece of advice, it's easier to hear you when you talk into the microphone.
and I'm like Katie over here. But the Stars are plus 650, the Panthers are plus 700, and one team is in the East, one team is in the West. And I was like, you could pick a specific, and I was like, I don't know which of those to pick, right? But you could pick a specific Stanley Cup Finals matchup.
Oh.
Both of them plus 1800. 100 bucks pays out 1900. And I was kind of like, I feel like that might be the one. It doesn't give me one team to cheer for. It's kind of just like, oh, go do your thing, everybody. But if the general consensus is that these two teams are the teams, I'm like, let's see what happens. I learned about somebody named Kachuk earlier. He seems important.
Matthew?
Yes, Matthew. He's the
Okay.
one. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
He's coming back from injury soon, though. So we need him back on the Panthers.
You could have given me a lot of guesses. I would not
How are
know which
you?
team
You're
Matthew
like
Tkachuk plays
judging
for.
hockey for this as an NBA fan when the shit is fucking preset. Like, that's more
Yeah.
fun to you? That's
Yeah.
stupid. It's horrible
Oh,
sport.
I'm sorry. I had this fun idea about, like, let's actually have it matter who's good. Not just throw darts at a dartboard to determine the champion.
Plus 175. Wow, it is way lower.
That's the Celtics?
No, that's the team.
Really? I'm kind of surprised by it. What are the Celtics? 225?
220.
Okay.
And then the Cavs are plus 600. But like, this is what you want, where the number one seeds in the East and the West are overwhelming favorites.
Yeah.
And in the playoffs, they just play seven games just to be doing it.
I mean, which part of, like, when Steph and LeBron kept playing in the finals was not enjoyable to you?
Kind of some of the years also.
Well, 2018 window was not very good. Yes, I agree that that one.
It was kind of only good one time.
Oh, 2000. Well, yeah, 2015, just because of the injuries, it would have been good. In 2017, like, the Cavs were an extremely good team. The Warriors were just the greatest team of all time.
It's the same team over and over and over again. You're like, this is so fun. Whatever team happened to pillage
That's
somebody else for their
you
draft picks.
understand that's the era that people are nostalgic for, right?
Which era?
LeBron versus Steph.
Is that what people are always nostalgic for whatever was 10 years ago.
I
You
don't
can just
disagree with you.
extend the period of nostalgia, except nobody's nostalgic for the Pistons. nobody
almost
wants
had
that again, but.
Lakers Warriors. No one was nostalgic for the 79 Sonics either. We almost had Lakers Warriors in round one. Now it is very plausible that we will see Lakers Warriors in round two.
I was actually thinking about this, and I was thinking about how the fandom of different sports and why baseball and to a, also an extent basketball, like the fan bases of some of these teams just are so small. And it's basically like if you get into a period, like if you're an NBA team, you always have hope because there's a draft pick, whatever. But there really hasn't been. like a single player that has transformed a franchise that much, right?
I'm sorry, in what time period are we talking here?
I don't know, 10 years?
I mean, Anthony Edwards?
Yeah, but like the Timberwolves are like, they're good and they're pay attentionable, but they're not going to win a championship. Their odds are plus 5,000 right
I
now.
mean, the Mavericks are a tough sell for this because they were so recently in another contending. They actually weren't that recently in another contending era. But Luka Doncic.
Luka definitely changed their fate.
Also, Luka transformed a team this year. Fun fact.
Hey, first off, I remember that Saturday night in New York.
Man,
Max
it was an
Christie was
impressive Saturday
awesome.
night. I
Don't think I
don't
forgot about
disagree.
it, okay? Us Lakers fans knew we were good beforehand and even somehow better after, okay? But and look, Tumani Kamara obviously changed the franchise. But in the NFL,
There was a funny stat, like the biggest year-to-year increase in the NFL. You're going to cite the NFL?
I am going to
Where
cite the
only
NFL.
one player matters?
Yeah, but and first off, that's not necessarily true. But every single team every year could reasonably think that their team is going to make the playoffs. This is what I was. I think that's
I
what
don't think
makes.
that's true anymore. I think
Name a
that's
team.
a.
Come up with a team that can't. You can't reasonably say, like the Giants. There's like maybe three teams where
Going
you
into
can.
the 2025 season?
Yes, going because like Washington last year, the Commanders. The Commanders could have
Yeah.
played in the Super Bowl.
They very well could have. I don't dispute that. I don't think that necessarily changes my point. I don't know. I'd have to look at the rosters for next season.
I mean, there
But
aren't that many
I'm
teams.
not
It's kind
seeing
of
the
like
case. I don't
the
know if I'm seeing
Jets, the
the.
Giants, the Titans.
I mean, I know the Browns were in the playoffs 2 years ago, but.
How could they not? Like, what do you mean they're in the playoffs 2 years ago? They have a lot of really good defensive players still. They also hypothetically have a quarterback who could be good. I think you're missing the point. Like, there are NBA teams that it's just like it's going to be a generation
I don't think
before
it's as
the.
long as you think it is.
I mean, for the Wizards, it's like it just feels hopeless unless they
You
get.
know who people felt that away about 2 years ago?
Who?
The Houston fucking Rockets?
You have to have so many good young players though in the NBA. Like, because I
I don't
don't
think
think
you
that
do.
you the
Detroit
Rockets
doesn't
have.
have that many young players. They've got Cade Cunningham and Jalen Duren and Ausar Thompson are like very
Don't you
solid.
think that the Pistons went through like a generation of badness?
I
How
mean, they
many
were in
years
the
did they
playoffs in
miss the
2019. Well, how long do you think a generation is exactly? I mean, granted, I'm the one who referred to Paige Bueckers as a generational talent last week. So there's some self
The generation
consistent.
stretches back to last year.
Yes.
I feel like the Pistons, I mean, since 2008, they've made the playoffs. Like, this is their third time making the playoffs, and they were in the first round two times.
Yeah, they
Like,
haven't won a playoff game since 2008.
but there are a lot
It's
of.
been a very bleak scratch. I'm not arguing that.
I think
But
there are a lot of teams like that. And the NFL every single year is what I'm saying. And I think it's what makes the fan base the schedule not being the imbalanced schedule, I think is a huge part of it that they're able to structure it that way. And so many other sports, like you just play so many games that it's almost impossible to have like
I think the imbalanced schedule is probably overrated. I think it probably has less to do with that and more with the fact that they only play 17 games.
and that one position matters way more than any other position.
I don't know if that's a feature.
You don't know if that's a feature?
I mean, it depends on a variety of things, but if you're a team that doesn't have that player, trying to find that player can certainly seem very hopeless. I mean, do you think Detroit's last 2 decades of NBA basketball are bleaker than, I mean, Chicago, like the Bears have had some individual seasons where they have made the playoffs, sure. Then they've
13 and
ended
three, not
those.
that long ago.
Then they've ended those with gut-wrenching losses.
There were numerous times that the Bears could have gone into the season,
But
that the fan base.
they didn't.
I understand that they didn't, but it's about going the perspective of you go into the draft, you go into the season, you're thinking to yourself, we could reasonably expect it wouldn't be like a miracle.
But it also,
to
like,
expect that we make the
it
playoffs.
doesn't mean that much if it's just the 1 year.
It means more to make the playoffs in the NFL than it means to make the playoffs in the NBA.
But you understand what I'm saying? Like, it's more frustrating to, like, have that 13-3 season and then have it translate into nothing than in the NBA. If you get that good, you are probably going to stay that good for a period of time. There's a roller coaster. There's a much more clear success cycle in the NBA.
You clearly don't remember that 8-8 wild card appearance that the Bears had in 2020.
I do not.
But also, it's kind of like, if Justin Fields pans out for the Bears, they're right there and they have a generational quarterback. And I mean, they're at Caleb right now.
But again,
like,
I don't think that's as good a situation.
Why?
Because those guys are pretty rare.
I agree that they're pretty rare.
And they're not.
But NBA players who transform a franchise, who take a franchise from not a contender to an actual title contender, there's like 10 per decade, maybe.
I mean, that seems like plenty.
Maybe that's even being
also
generous.
The difference is those guys change teams, whereas like Patrick Mahomes is going to play for the Chiefs his entire career in all likelihood.
And that's a negative?
Yeah, because if you're not the Kansas City Chiefs, it's a negative. Particularly if you're in the same division.
But you could have Josh Allen and you could have Joe Burrow.
Yeah, and they've had Josh Allen and they still haven't made the Super Bowl.
I think Bills fans have had a very fun run with Josh Allen, whether they've run up against Patrick Mahomes enough times. But like, I don't know. It was just the thing I was thinking.
Look, obviously, the NFL structure is great for success. I think it has to do with.
I do think that is why, though, is that it's so much easier to be a Jaguars fan and to be like, we're coming.
Yeah, have you ever known a Jaguars fan? Have you ever talked to a Jaguars? I don't know that I have.
I know that they exist. And I think the NBA structure is very demoralizing to some fan bases.
I think it's the opposite. I think a lot of fans embrace, like, yeah, like Blazers fans, they are so passionate about the fact that the team is too good.
What do you mean? They're mad that the team is too good?
Yeah, Portland fans are very upset about it.
Oh my God. Because they wanted a better draft pick?
Yeah.
They have all the players. They have the pieces. They don't need any more pieces.
All the players, but I agree that they should
let Scoot develop.
Let Denny and Tamani cook.
I love that those are the players. It's not Scoot. It's not Shane. It's not Klingon. It's Denny and Tamani.
Oh,
that's 100%. What I'm saying. The Blazers have all of the young players that they need right now.
And at some point, I will be cooking with the Belgian waffle mix the Blazers sent me for Tamani Kamara's Defensive Player of the Year campaign.
Is he Belgian?
Yes, he is.
I have no idea. He's my favorite basketball player of all time.
You know, they
but
actually
I did not know this information about him.
They showed that on the screen. You couldn't read it because it was in SD.
Yep.
And some maple syrup. So there you go.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm all
Seattle Sounders.
I was hoping we would never talk about the Sounders.
You were just trying to filibuster.
No. Yeah. I'll talk for 25 hours to not have to talk about the Seattle Sounders.
Shouts to Cory Booker. I mean, the best season of any Booker. But there's exciting news to talk about for the Sounders, who got a monster 3 road points on Saturday. Danny Muskovsky getting his first shot of the season, put home a Pedro de la Vega shot that was saved in the 17th minute, and the Sounders made it stand up by limiting FC Dallas to one shot on goal in .8xG. The bad news is Jackson Reagan left at halftime with a hamstring injury, was replaced by Kim Keehee, making his first appearance of his second stint with the Sounders. It was De La Vega's first start since March 8th, and he left at halftime. Sounders also getting healthier in the attack. Jordan Morris traveled and was in the 18, but did not play, moving closer to a return, which would be very welcome for the Sounders, who now head home on Saturday for their first home match since March 22nd, as they host Nashville, who is off to a strong start with 4 wins in 8 matches and a +4 goal differential.
When did Tumani move to the U.S.? He went to high school in the U.S.
I believe so, yeah. Seattle Reign FC held a potent Orlando Pride attack to just one goal, but that was not enough, as Barbara Banda scored in the 41st minute to give. I believe I was corrected on this. I believe the Orlando Pride did, in fact, win the NWSL Cup last year after I said that they lost in the finals. Let me double check that though, so I don't get that wrong this time. Yes, they defeated the Washington Spirit 1-0 in the NWSL Championship. So
I
that
can't
is
believe you didn't
correct
know
in
that
there.
information.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing.
The Reign did attempt 13 shots, 5 of them on goal, but could not beat Pride keeper Anna Moorhouse. Good news on the health front. Lynn Biendolo came on at halftime for her Reign debut, replacing Jordan Heidema, who also is working back from injury. Reign will need them heading into a derby match Friday night against the Portland Thorns, who are off to a slow start with just 5 points and 3 goals from 4 matches, but are coming off their first win of the season at Utah last Friday.
Was the trade that sent Kamara, the Dane,
DeAndre.
was that was with the old owner of the Suns, right? Or was that the new
No, that
owner?
was Matt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just all-time bad trade. Like, what did the Suns get out of this?
They got Yusuf Nurkic. They also got Grayson Allen. In
Okay.
fairness,
Because even Ayton's like a, is Ayton a more valuable current player than Nurk?
yes, given that the Suns had to give away a draft pick to get off the remainder of Nurkic's contract, even though they took an unfavorable contract in return.
The
So
Suns did or the Blazers did?
the Suns did. Like, they didn't get off the full contract with Nurkic, but they got off part of it, and still that took a first round pick.
I mean, they got all of the worst players in this trade and gave up the best young player in the trade.
I mean, I don't know, they would say Grayson Allen is one of the worst players in the trade.
I mean, he's not Jrue Holiday, DeAndre Ayton, Dame Lillard. I guess he's probably maybe better than Nurk and Nasir Little and Keon Johnson, but.
Yeah, Nasir Little turned out to be a low key salary dump for the Blazers in that one.
Oh man, they just I feel like did the Blazers end up with any picks in that deal? They got a
Well, they got Milwaukee's picks. The Phoenix portion of it, which was negotiated separately,
They
did
got
not
Milwaukee's pick and then they
involve it.
flipped that for Denny.
I believe that the picks that they traded for Denny were both the ones that they received from the Boston Celtics for Jrue Holiday when they retraded him. I think
So
they
they're
still
still
have all
part
the
of that deal
Milwaukee
though,
picks.
basically.
Yes.
Wow.
So, yes, you can trace both Tumani and Denny to the same trade.
All right. I mean, it's not bad to trade Dame, like an aging, expensive Dame Lillard to Denny and Tumani. It's a pretty good deal.
Oh, I mean, the trade has not worked out well at all for the Milwaukee Bucks. So
I
the
still
Blazers
love Dame,
have
but like.
Bucks swap in 2028. Oh, they still have the most and least favorable of Portland, Boston, and Milwaukee's picks in 2029. Washington got the second most favorable. And then a swap with the Bucks in 2030.
And that's unprotected. The 20. Oh, I mean, that could be an extraordinarily valuable pick, too. Like, what are the Bucks going to be in 2029?
It's a great question. All right, UW women's basketball news beyond the delay of Daniels. Some exciting transfer news last week. Huskies have not seen any of the players from last season's roster. I have not seen at least any of them submit notifications of transfer, but adding a couple of key players, starting with USC wing Avery Howell. Boise native was ranked 16th in the Hoop Girls Top 100 last year and averaged 7.5 points and 3 rebounds in 20.8 minutes per game as a freshman. Shot 40% on threes and replaced Juju Watkins in the Trojans' starting five for the regionals. Had 18 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 steals in their Sweet 16 win over Serena Sundell and Kansas State. This is a big time prospect. I first saw Avery Howell play in the Nike Hoop Summit this time last year. Then was there for her 2 starts in the regionals last year for the Trojans. She's got really good size for a wing at 5'11", shoots it quite well, tough defender. It's interesting because the Huskies currently project to return all three of their perimeter starters, Ella Dean, Savia Sellers, and Hannah Steins. So I'm thinking the 5'11" Howell could project alongside them in 4-out lineups like we saw at the end of last season when 5'11" Chloe Briggs was the fourth starter in those groups. But if you go back to the Huskies' loss to Columbia in the NCAA tournament, One of the big issues was they just really didn't have any scoring outside that group of Ladine, Sellers, Steins, and Delia Daniels. And now you plug in Howell, and that's a much better offensive player that opponents are going to have to account for with that group. Huskies also added some size with former Michigan center Yulia Grabovskaya. The native of Russia played one season at Middle Tennessee State and one at Michigan, averaging 5.3 points and 4.1 rebounds in 13.5 minutes per game off the bench. Per minute rate's quite impressive, although the efficiency was not there. She just had a 0.501 true shooting percentage. She was listed as a junior last year, and I don't know if it was something about her professional experience or what, but that would suggest she only has 1 year of eligibility remaining. But still, a spot where the Huskies are going to need more size in the front court, losing Daniels and Tyra Ekai, their other key front court player. I still think Bryn McGahee, this year's big time recruit, is the most likely starter at center, but Grabovskaya gives them some experience, college experience in that position as well.
Let me ask you, why was Avery Powell in Avery Powell, Avery Howell in the transfer portal?
I don't know. I mean,
Just
USC,
cause.
despite the Juju Watkins injury, they are bringing in one of the nation's top freshmen, Jazzy Davidson, a Portland area native who was the standout of this year's Hoop Summit. And they return Kennedy
I
Smith,
love to
who's
hear that
also
a player from
permanent.
Portland is going to USC.
Kennedy Smith
My
was.
favorite college for her to have gone to is anywhere else.
Oh,
No,
yes.
number one is UW. Number two is anywhere else.
Yes. Kennedy Smith, who was also a part of that freshman class for USC and started alongside Juju Watkins. So the two of them, I think, are in the mix for minutes on the wing. And then probably the Trojans are going to add a veteran transfer, but it was kind of surprising given that, Lindsey Gottlieb spent a lot of time during the regional talking up their seven-player freshman class. And in addition to Howell, Kaylee Heckel, who played a lot of minutes for them at point guard, also submitted a notification of transfer. I don't know if she's landed anywhere as yet. Well, apparently there's UConn rumors with her.
What kind of money is there NIL wise? And I guess going into so new house agreement, right, is basically setting a salary cap, so to say, from what universities can spend,
So
right,
most of
and
the money
direct
that the
agreements.
colleges are going to be spending directly is going to be spent on football.
Okay, so is there a per sport dollar amount, or is
Yes.
it okay?
I mean, there's a total dollar amount. You can distribute it any way you want as the college. But basically it's like you can't spend $10 million on football and $5 million on men's basketball and $5 million on women's basketball.
So it's like, what is the number? 24 million?
I thought it was like 18 million.
You basically need to structure it however you see fit. If you're Duke, North Carolina, or whatever, maybe you spend a little bit more in basketball or something like that, right? So there's not a lot of NIL money going to University of Washington women's basketball players,
There's
one
not
would
a lot of
assume.
money from the university going directly. Now, that does not stop the, off-court NIL deals from third parties.
Actual
And
NIL money.
correct. So, Aaliyah Chavez is the top prospect in this year's class. She didn't have quite as strong a hoop summit as Jazzy Davidson, but, I thought was very solid in her own right. And there was a report in an ESPN story. No, I guess On3 first reported this. I'm seeing it written about that she asked for 1 million NIL. From LSU and ended up at Oklahoma. Her father in this ESPN story denied that report, but that's sort of the number that is out there.
For like a superstar women's college basketball player.
For a superstar recruit, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think you have to give Tina Langley credit because
Oh, huge credit.
who knows what UW's operating with, but to be able to, even if you're spending money, it's one of those things where it's not worse by spending money. That doesn't matter, right? You spend what you're given, obviously. But to be able to go out and get big time recruits in a situation where there might not be as much money. And I would assume that for Avery Howell, I would imagine there are probably some other schools who are willing to pay her NIL money
Oh, without question. I mean,
more or the same.
I think she was, the list is probably growing longer at this point, but She was definitely in the top 25 of the transfer rankings that we had on ESPN.
So I think to be able to go sign a player like that, get a
Yeah,
commitment from a
she's
player
number
like that's
18.
pretty huge. I
That's
mean,
not a
yeah,
question.
if you
She's
think
just.
about the 18th best player in the portal, right? Like all told, a lot of portal players are better than freshman players, right?
Correct.
Like being the 18th best player in the portal probably means you're like the 30th or something best player at a new institution next year,
I mean,
right?
this is probably the second biggest transfer that UW has gotten in this current era behind Delia Daniels.
From where?
And she was started out at Cal, but she was also a Seattle native. Like, I think it's possible that one part of the decision for Howell was wanting to get back to the Pacific Northwest as a
Where's she from?
Boise native.
Boise.
Yeah. But it's not the same thing as a Seattle native.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that Boise's like nearby. It's a
It's kind of
shorter
a,
flight, but it's not that much shorter of a
yes,
flight.
not dramatically. It, yeah. It's more climate similar than LA, that's for sure.
Well, and again, like if you look at that as, let's say that she's the 30th best player or in the top 30 of players who are changing teams in this offseason, that's massive for UW to be in that
Especially
mix.
because they're not losing anyone at this point to transfer.
And even when you think about it, like some of the bigger schools hypothetically could be signing a couple of these players to be in the mix and competing with the biggest schools in women's college basketball is a place that UW hasn't been necessarily.
No, and I think it's a place they're getting back to. I'm very excited about the direction of the program.
Is Tina, where is Tina Langley? Where is she from? Does she have a connection to UW?
No. So I
Is
wouldn't
she on
necessarily
Poach
assume.
Watch all of a sudden?
If things go well enough, yes.
Okay.
I should native of Alabama. I hadn't remembered
I don't can't imagine losing a coach there.
that. Their women's basketball team is doing just fine.
We got Alexis.
Well, no, let's.
We already know. We won the trade. It's like the Blazers and getting Tumani Kamara and Denny. We got Damon Williams and Alexis. We're good.
We'll get to her in a second. But men's basketball transfer news. It's official. Wesley Yates III is
Hello.
returning to UW after one season at
Back.
USC. So maybe it's good news that Jazzy Davidson is going to USC. There's been a bit of a pipeline lately. The four-star recruit did not play in 2023-24 with the Huskies due to injury before following his cousin Quincy Pondexter from the UW coaching staff to the Trojans, where he averaged 14.1 points per game as a freshman, shot 44% on threes, led Big Ten freshmen in scoring in conference play, and only Grade Osabor on the 2024-25 Huskies rated better by BPM than Wesley Yates III.
I remember you talking about we were indicting. We were both pretty judgmental. I think you were even more so than I was about Danny
I
Sprinkle.
was, yeah.
And I think the postseason, I mean, this is only like a month ago, but
Feels like a lot longer in so many senses.
I labeled it an incomplete, more or less. And I think you were again a little bit harsher on Danny Sprinkle's first season as
It
UW
wasn't even
coach.
necessarily his first season. It was also just the comments about it in terms of like getting a late start. And you know what? That's where Danny Sprinkle has proven me wrong because with a full offseason to go out and recruit, he is doing work.
Hello. The other piece, the thing that you mentioned in that was Wesley Yates' transfer
It
as
was.
one of the negatives of Danny Sprinkle for that first season. And all of a
We
sudden, Wesley Yates is back.
fixed the glitch.
Yeah. Wesley Yates is back. We haven't heard about Cupon yet, right?
We have not yet heard
He's coming
about
back.
Cupid.
Come on. We know. We're
It
not dumb.
seems very likely.
Wesley Yates is back. Coupon is back home. The roster is looking amazing. Danny Sprinkle, you're back in, baby.
Oh, I'm legitimately excited about UW men basketball, which is a dangerous place to be.
It's April 14th. We will go months without thinking about UW men's basketball
But you know
coming up
what?
pretty soon
You
here.
will remember you like Wesley Yates III has been a part of the program long enough. You'll remember his name, as opposed to when they first start talking about Nico Bandalo, and I believe it's Jacob Ignacevich. Yeah, this is just going to come as a complete shock to you.
I think I don't know. I don't want to predict how I'm gonna feel. I will say Pelton Cast Golden Rule come September. like the amount of time that will have passed in the next 7 months before I think about UW men's college basketball. I'm going to forget a lot of things about this team. But in this moment right now, I'm feeling very good about what Danny Sprinkle has done.
When is the last time that the UW men's basketball team had a better record in conference play than the football team? So in 2008, in the same academic year, 2018-19 was when they won the Pac-12 regular season. They went 15-3. What was UW football that
UW
year?
UW men's went 15-3?
Yeah.
And Pac-12 play?
We signed Mike Hopkins to a really long extension. That was a better, because that academic year, the football team went 7-2.
That was when they played North Carolina in the tournament? Or, right? We played North Carolina two times. This is the second time.
Yes.
I was really sick. Hotties were in town.
That is correct. Huskies lost 81-59. So I think, I'm not sure how far before that we have to go back to find two times that the UW men's basketball has had a better conference record than football. But I think it's in play this year. I think it is plausible.
Wow. The disrespect to Damon Williams.
I mean, I didn't say it was likely. I just said it's plausible.
You can credit the men's basketball team, but don't compare them to the football team.
Okay. I'm just throwing it out there.
All's quiet on the Western Front with the football team. Right now, no news is good news.
It is great news. I have no
notes.
I've
seen some
game
reports though of just videos of Damon during camp, and I'm just like, oh my god. The pass that they're so he's such a good thrower. Oh, like seeing him throw to the edge, literally no defense at all. And I'm just like, oh, I'm like the Vince McMahon meme of just seeing Damon. Anytime I get to see Damon throw the ball, my heart is palpitating.
So Yates is the likely starter at small forward as part of a projected lineup with the three transfers, the two conference players of the year, Ignacevic and Peterson, plus Vazumana Diallo and Frank Kepnong as holdovers. And then the Huskies continuing to add, they also signed four-star recruit Jasir Rencher. The 6'5" Bay Area native signed with Texas A&M before reopening his recruitment after Buzz Williams left from Maryland. So this is a nice little pull for the Huskies.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Wesley Yates would be a cherry on top. This is a cherry on top. This is the sprinkles right here.
The Huskies now a top 10 recruiting class, according to 247sports.com, adding him to J.J. Mandiquit, Cortland Muldrew, and Nico Bendallo.
The graphic with the like Danny Sprinkle FaceTime video call. It's so strange.
I don't know that I'm seeing this.
It was the one that Joe Varea posted. I assume it came from Jasir Rencher, but
you might want to angle the microphone the direction that you kept the computer.
I've got two computers here. You don't have two computers?
Lest I forget. Shouts to Joe Dumars. Apparently headed back to the front office.
Is it two computers? Is that his thing?
No, two phones is his thing. There's
two
a famous
phones.
Photo
That's
of Joe Dumars with the two phones.
Oh, okay. He had two votes for a different reason than Kevin Gates.
Yes, a very different reason.
We assume.
This is one other bit of recruiting news I learned while looking things up. Roydale Smiley's son, Legend Smiley, was a four-star prospect from the Seattle area.
Wait, who's Roydale Smiley?
He played with Brandon Roy's and Brandon Roy's older brother, Ed, at Garfield in the early 2000s, played at USC with Quincy Wilder.
Huh. This is not related to Gerald Smiley?
No.
Unrelated.
That was my first thought. But no, it's Roydale Smiley. I don't know if they're related. They're very plausible.
Oh, there's a team that Luca played over the weekend, a Mercer Island team that had a Banchero on the team.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
He played 3 years at Garfield, winning Metro League MVP as a junior before playing his senior season at Lincoln Academy in Missouri. He's now committed to San Francisco. So we'll keep an eye on him.
I don't even know who we're talking about anymore.
That was also a shout out to the Garfield listener.
Okay.
UW softball was swept in a three-game series at UCLA. The momentum came to a bit of an end in that one.
Lost the trade.
No, they were competitive in the final game, losing 6-5.
Okay,
despite
great. That's all we need.
An Alexis DeBoer home run.
There we go.
Seventh to extend it. They dropped to seventh in the Big Ten standings at 7-5, but have a chance to move back up, visiting 3-10 Michigan State this weekend. All right, lastly, the Seahawks have transacted at the quarterback position. where they brought back former backup quarterback Drew Lock on a 2-year deal worth
Wait, I'm
over
just going to
$45
throw something
million.
out there for you. This is on Rundown Watch right now.
You have Ben's baseball?
UW Mets baseball
They're
is.
still below 500 overall. So that was my conclusion that they don't merit, even though with the win over number 11 UCLA.
Six in the conference. Any win over UCLA is huge.
Agreed.
I'm saying they don't have to be on there, but they're on Rundown Watch.
They're doing it for the rundown.
Yeah, doing it for the rundown.
Okay.
I think they won something like, I mean, they're only 6-4 in their last 10. They had like a 5-6 game win streak overall, though. Anyway, okay. The Seattle Seahawks have transacted a quarterback.
Drew Lock is back. Lock actually had a higher EPA per play than Geno Smith in his two starts in 2023, albeit with a
Wow.
dreadful CPOA.
Wow, people.
He was considerably less effective in five starts for an awful Giants team last season.
Trade him for a third round pick.
I definitely think he's an upgrade on what we saw from Sam Howell last season, which was
Lest John Schneider not respect him.
not great.
No, it's fine. I actually was really annoyed about this, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Counter take.
Is there, this is a counter take? What are the takes? If there are takes about Drew Lock, people are having too many takes. First off, I guess I'm giving
Perfectly
takes,
solid.
but Drew Lock is fine.
A
This
take
is
about
not an
Drew.
anti-Drew Lock take. This is, I was hoping the Seahawks were going to draft a quarterback take, and now they're not.
I don't think it rules it out.
It does rule it out. How many quarterbacks do you think are going to be on the roster? You don't sign Drew Lock 2 weeks. They didn't need to sign Drew Lock right now, I assume.
Probably not.
Has Sam Howell is still under contract, right?
Correct.
So maybe they're going to roll with four quarterbacks. I don't know. Doesn't
I
seem
think
likely.
they're gonna roll with not Sam Howell.
I agree that they're good. It's a little bit. He was so bad. Yeah. Sam Howell's going to be an interesting footnote in history. I wanted them to go into this draft with the position because Sam Howell was like, they're not set at backup quarterback, right?
Without question. That's why they signed Drew Luck.
And I wanted them to go into this draft. Now they can't even get on a call. Let's say that a quarterback, Jackson Dart or whatever, maybe Shadur seems unlikely, but maybe there's a quarterback who falls toward where the Seahawks are, and maybe there's a team that's excited about Jackson Dart. They'll probably still have to jump in front of other teams, but the Seahawks will have no leverage to say, hey, we're going to draft him, which
I
they
don't
could have
agree with that.
hypothetically said. You don't agree with that?
I don't think that Drew Lock changes things. They could also just cut Drew Lock.
Okay. I mean, again, I would be happy to be wrong, but also I'm a big Tyler Shook guy. So I would be more excited about Tyler Shook right now than Drew Lock. Drew Lock's fine. I think he is a very capable backup quarterback. It was fun seeing him beat the Eagles, but I don't. What does it mean?
Not that much.
That's the only piece. I wanted them to draft a quarterback. We never get this.
I agree that I would like to get it. But also, like, if they were going to draft a quarterback, they probably wouldn't. If they thought they were going to draft a quarterback and it Drew Lock was going to change that, like, they wouldn't have signed Drew Lock.
No, it's more like we're finding. It's like when you hear the pick beforehand, when you see the tweet or whatever, you see the Shams tweet, and you're just like, they're dead set on or whatever, right? Like Adam Schefter, it's like they're dead set on this player at this pick, and you're like, I just wanted to see it. I just wanted to be let down live, and now I've been let down in advance.
Well, I can be let down live since I'm not
Think
ruling it out.
about how many times we've been let down by the Seahawks not drafting a quarterback.
I don't know that I've been let down that many times.
I just, it's fun sometimes having a young quarterback.
I agree.
This is the other version of every team has a chance of competing. Every year the Seahawks have a chance of drafting a quarterback and they never do. We don't get fun things, but they'll draft other fun players. I'm not that worried about that, but I was just like, oh, Tyler
Yeah,
Shook.
you're gonna get a lot of vegetables in the NFL draft, and you're gonna like it.
You think this draft's going to be a vegetables draft?
I do think so.
Tyler Shook's going to be good.
Either that, or you're gonna draft a running back in the second round.
That's worse than
It's always
vegetables.
50-50. I agree. That's
I
like
always
the
forget that Tyler Shook played at the team from down south, but he left there. That's how you know you like him.
we played for them so long ago, it's easy to forget.
He is 25 years old. Well, look, if Tyler Shook's gonna be good, he better be good right away.
There was a WNBA player who got drafted who was, I believe, a 7th-year senior.
Let's play the game. Who's older, Tyler Shook or Drew Locke?
Oh, I think Drew Locke's got to be older.
He's 28. How about Sam Howell?
Oh, Sam Howell's way younger.
Yeah, Sam Howell is
That's easy.
younger. Going into his third season. What about Michael Penix Jr.?
Same age.
Younger.
Wow.
We thought Michael Penix was in college forever.
Yeah, Alabama guard Zay Green, who was drafted in the WNBA draft on Monday, started her career in 2018-19.
The year that Tyler Shook, his last year at Oregon, UW's starting quarterback was Dylan Morris.
When this was 2020,
Yeah.
the bubble season. It distinctly was not a bubble. The COVID season. Yes, Dylan Morris started at quarterback then.
Was a long time ago.
Pac-12 North champions, Washington Huskies.
They did not face each other because the game was canceled.
On that note,
Thanks for listening.
thanks.
At least he's got that interdisciplinary studies degree from
I mean,
Louisville.
you better have a master's at this point.
Oh. Did you have any perspective on Coachella? Okay. Well then, neither do I.
Would have had a perspective if I had a perspective.
No, I was sort of, I've been formulating a take, a perspective on Coachella, but I haven't quite gotten there. I think music festivals are very strange in 2025.
Was there a period of time where music festivals weren't strange?
Yeah.
Okay. Congrats on the tiny desk.
Oh, yeah. I was waiting for that. You got it in before midnight, so it counts.
Is that the rule? It has to be within 24 hours or day of, I guess, in this case.
It's like, oh my God, the 30 Rock, the Cable Town boss. I can't remember his name. You have to say happy birthday. Well, you clearly have not rewatched 30 Rock as much as I have.
Not that part.
you have to say happy birthday on the day or it doesn't count.
I mean, that I agree with. Some people texted me in the evening and said, "Sorry, this is so late." And I was like, "That's fine. It's still on the day."
If it would have been the next day, it would have not been fine.
It would have been unacceptable.
Were you okay with me telling the Discord that it was your birthday?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure. You're so public about things now, though.
Am I? I suppose so.
Basically an influencer.
Oh, I am.
That's more or less, yeah. Tyler Shook was born in 1999. How old?
Thank you.